Kemoadim l'simcha, chagim uzmanim l'sason to all. And today's daf, Masechet Beitzah, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Gimel. But we are holding still on daf Chof Beis Amud Beis. And that brings us to a very special moment from our Kapitan, who's actually in the Old City today, which is amazing. Give it to us. So yesterday, what we saw was that according to Rabbi Gamliel, he had three special cases where he was more machmer, and even though he was a grandson of Hillel HaZaken, he nonetheless paskened like Beit Shammai. So we had those three things, but there's also three things that Rabbi Gamliel was more makel than other people. And so, just keep things even over here, afu amar shlosha advarim lahakel. There were three things that he was actually makel on. First of all, he said, bechabdin beit hamitot, that you are allowed to sweep your eating room. The beit hamitot, in those days, of course, the eating was done on these beautiful Roman-style couches. So we call it the beit hamitot. And that would mean that you're going to possibly risk, because remember, in those days, the floors were basically dirt, so you could be mashve gumot, and that would be a problem of binyan. So then this would be nogea, all kinds of questions about Dovashen Miskaven, and so on, as we're going to see. Umenichinata mugmar b'yom tov, he also said that you're allowed to burn incense on Yom Tov. We're going to see again whether this means to burn the incense over the clothing that will then absorb the smell. Does it mean just because you want to smell? And the other big chiddush he said was, osim gedim mekulas b'leilei psachim, that even on a Yom Tov, you're allowed to make that famous gedim mekulas, which we spoke about in Psachim, with the whole story of Tudas Harofe, which we'll remind ourselves of today. And that is that it basically looks like a Korban Pesach. It's got the kra'av and so on the sides, and we call it mekulas because it's as if it's wearing its weapons. It's like a knight ready for battle. But the Chachamim answered all these three. So let's take the question over here of the incense first. So Amar Ravasi, machloket legamer. The whole question over here is whether you're allowed to get this incense burning in order to be gomer something. Gomer means to bring smell into your begodim. So they used to, they didn't have dry cleaning, and that meant that their clothes needed to be deodorized. So they would actually perfume things by burning incense in the closet. So the question over here is, are we talking about the machlokas between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim vis-a-vis the impact that you're going to be having on the beged, or are we talking about just burning it in order to actually smell it yourself? So the pashtas lahariach, which is similar to achila, it's a nehne kol aguf, and that should be considered to be Urchel Nefesh. And that should be everybody's opinion that it's okay. So perhaps the only machlokas, says Rav Hasi, is Davka Binogeya Bin Gomer. But La Riach Debreyakol Mutter, just like any other Urchel Nefesh. Meisvet. Problem is that we have a Breita that shows that Rav Hasi seems to be wrong. It says in the Breita, Ein Mechabdin Beit HaMitot B'Yom Tov, V'Shol Beit Rabbi Gamliel Mechabdin. You're not allowed to sweep. Basically, this would mean sweep the dining room floor. So you're not allowed to sweep the dining room floor in Yom Tov. And in Beit Rabbi Gamliel, they did. Oh, my Rebbe Eliezer, Barab Yitzadok, I can tell you that many, many times I used to go in with my dad into Rabbi Gamliel's home, and I can tell you they definitely did not do that. It's what they actually did, I think, was people were led to believe that they were doing the sweeping on Yom Tov. But what they actually did is they swept the floor before Yom Tov, and then they would spread sheeting over the floor. And then the next day, when people would come in and they had the big suda, then lekovet the nasi, as Rashi says. So then they would take off the sheets, and then it would be a completely fresh, newly cleaned floor. So it would look like it had been swept on Yom Tov, but actually, it was swept from before Yom Tov. Amru lo, Im kein, af Shabbat mutar la'asot ken. I mean, what you're saying wouldn't make sense, because if that's all that Rabbi Gamliel meant, I mean, Rabbi Gamliel and the Mishnah couldn't have meant that, because Rabbi Gamliel was saying that that was a chiddush that they allowed on Yontif. But if you're talking about this, this is mutar even on Shabbos. So who would disagree with such a thing? It must be, therefore, that Rabbi Gamliel was matir actual sweeping, not doing what you said, just covering it over with sheets. So therefore, Rich, you want to just mute? So basically, I mean, it could be that this is true, that they did this, but this has nothing to do with what it was that Rabbi Gamliel was matir. And it's not like you're saying that he really wasn't matir. The other thing was that, and this is the part that's nogea right now, what Rabbi Asi said, Ein menichin et hamugmar b'yom tov v'shobet Rabbi Gamliel menichim. So Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzedek said, I can tell you that that's not true. I myself went with my dad many times to the home of Rabbi Gamliel. And it was not that they had allowed you to put down the mugmar on Yom Tov. Ela mevin ardas kiocho barzel. What they did was, before Yom Tov, they would bring these large braziers and, well, an adarski is more like a censer, because the idea over here is that you smell it directly and not that it's burning it under something else. And they would fill them up with smoke, but they would then make sure that the smoke stayed inside by plugging them up before Yontav. And then the next day, when the guests would arrive, that's when they would go ahead, they would open up the nikvehem, they would open up the holes, and then all of the contained smell would then spread through the room. And that's what happened, but it's not that they actually would do it on Yontav. Now, note that over here, we are not talking about clothes. We're talking about opening it up so that the people who came into the Nasi's home could smell it. And that's not like Rav Asi, that the Machlokas was only talking about where you did this to your clothing. And here, too, of course, the Chachamim said to him, no, that's not possible. When Rav Gamliel said that it's mutter on Yontav, he could not have meant what you're saying, because you could have done that even on Shabbos. And if that's all that he was being matir, him came out for Shabbat mutar la'asot ken. And since we know for a fact that Rabbi Gamliel was being matir something specifically against the others on Yontav, it must be that he really was matir burning incense. But burning incense for what? For smelling in the room, because that was what the whole case was talking about. It's not that anybody said, but we're not talking about making smells in the room. We're talking about making smells on the gutim. Clearly, Rav Asi is wrong, because the Braita is saying that the machlokas was in terms of the direct smell. Ela'i itmar hachi itmar. Actually, we must have misquoted Rav Asi, and that what Rav Asi actually said was, Om Rav Asi, machloket lahariach. He said just the opposite. Everybody is made that you cannot go and be mitakein the begadim by making them smell good and putting the burning brazier into the closet. But to smell, that was what Rav Gamliel was matir. Ibailo, mahu le'ashen. Would it be okay to actually smoke food? So let's see, we've got these fruits that we're drying, and we want to smoke them with these delicious spices so that they have this extra taste to them. Would that be mutter? So Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba Amar Rav, that is usser. And Shmuel says that it's mutter. Now, this entire sugya, of course, is based on the yesod, which we already began discussing yesterday, when we were talking about the question of showering and whether there's a difference between tzerech eichel nefesh, that is shove kol nefesh, and that is a diuk that the Gemara makes in the pasuk. Ach asher yeachel l'chol nefesh. Now, l'chol nefesh means universally, that people all over relate to this as something that they need. But if it's something that is only for mefunakim, mu'unagim, so then we're not matir it as the basic heter of tzerech eichel nefesh. Now, you'll note that on a surface level, this seems to be devastatingly contradicted by the whole idea of mitoch. If mitoch shehutra l'tzerech eichel nefesh, shehutra shelo l'tzerech eichel nefesh, so then kol shekein, if you have something which is a type of thing that's done for Tzorech Kol Nefesh, it can be done for a more limited Tzorech Kol Nefesh, no? In other words, if I'm allowed, let's say we said that you're allowed to carry something that is not needed for Ochel Nefesh. Why? Because it was a malacha that you would need to do for Ochel Nefesh. So therefore, you're allowed to carry around your you're allowed to carry around your iPad, right? So if that's the case, I mean, so isn't it obvious that it should be the same thing, that if you're allowed to do something which is a universal Ochel Nefesh, then you should be allowed to do something which is my personal Ochel Nefesh. It's a very strange situation to have both the din of mitoch shutra letzorech or shelo letzorech, and to also have, at the same time, the concept of lechol nefesh versus things that are idiosyncratic uses that we spoke about yesterday, that idiosyncratic uses are not mutter. Now, that would lead to some type of, very strange situation where if you're doing an actual Tzorech Ochel Nefesh, but it happens to be that you are one of the small percentages of people, let's say, that according to Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba, enjoy having fruits that are extra tasty like this, that you're not allowed to do, and that's usher because it's not L'chol Nefesh. But to do something that has nothing at all to do with Ochel Nefesh, that you can do. I mean, this certainly does not seem to make sense on the surface. What it's forcing us to acknowledge is that the first determination that we have to make is what Ochel Nefesh is mutter. Having once defined what Ochel Nefesh is mutter, then we can say that that same type of thing would be mutter shelo letzorech Ochel Nefesh. But that makes the entire sugya exceedingly complex. Because then we have to, or do we have to look at every usage to determine whether it's a universal usage? Or can we say mitoch without being concerned with how broad this particular usage is? And we're limiting Ochel Nefesh itself because the Torah stated the Chol Nefesh more than we would be limiting the mitoch of other inyanim that don't have to do with Tzorech Ochel Nefesh. You can see the type of complexities that this might lead to. This is just the tip of an iceberg, which of course extends more deeply into the question in general, what malachas exactly do we mean that we're going to be matir letzorech ochel nefesh? Because look, it's all very nice to talk about mitoch shmut letzorech ochel nefesh, shmut shlo letzorech ochel nefesh, but we certainly do not have a blanket heter for doing ochel nefesh if it's something, even if it is universal, which generally is a few steps away from the Ochel Nefesh. That was the machlokas that we also started discussing yesterday between the Chachomim and Rabbi Yehuda about whether Makshirei Ochel Nefesh are doicha or not. And then furthermore, we have also the questions of whether these are things that would normally be done as your preparations for Ochel Nefesh, or they're things that are usually taken for granted as having been done. Now, that's also, I'm just introducing some brief ideas that we're going to be thinking about later, because you'll recall that there are two psukim that differentiate Yontif from Shabbos. One of them is the Ach Asher Yachel Ochel Nefesh, and the other is Kol Melechet Avodah Lo Ta'asu. Now, Melechet Avodah is obviously different than the definition of Shabbat, where it simply says Kol Melacha, not Melechet Avodah. One of the major approaches to the distinctions between which melachas we can do and which melachas we cannot do, the one that is well known is the question of whether something that could have been done from before Yontif or not, although the details of that are not well known, and we're going to have to discuss that. Is it a particular case that it could have been done? Or even if in this case it was absolutely impossible for it to be done, it's not included within the set of malachas that are generally done before the Yontif. But then there's a completely different approach to the idea of Melechet Avodah. And according to these Rishonim, the idea of Melechet Avodah is anything that, generally speaking, you don't do for yourself. So in other words, if you talk about a malacha, the malacha per se is not the problem. So that if what I'm doing, generally speaking, people do it for themselves, right? So like I'm squeezing an orange or I'm crushing a pepper. So those are not the kind of things that I hire somebody to do. I mean, I'll do that in my kitchen. It's just done as part of daily living. and I'll turn on the fire and I'll make myself a cup of coffee. So even if I am a spoiled, rotten guy and all I know about coffee is Starbucks or something like that, Lamaisa, the universal is that this is not considered to be a malachas avodah. It's plain a malacha. But suppose I do not have any flour to make bread. So to say, okay, so for you today, the Ochel Nefesh requires you to go out, harvest the flour, and then you have to grow, you're going to have to do all of the things, the winnowing and the disha, and you're going to have to crush the flour. And you say, hey, slobs don't do that. They hire somebody to do it. So the idea of hiring somebody to do it is called melechet avodah. I don't do work, man. I may do malacha. I sure don't do work. Okay, so then that's the kind of thing the Torah is asring doing work. It's not asring doing malacha in terms of ochel nefesh. It's a fascinating kind of distinction. So then only those type of things that are generally done by people that you hire to do, or you buy it already done in the store. So that would define the, according to these Rishonim, not whether it's doable before Yontif, but rather the quality of what type of thing that you're doing. All of these things, of course, are going to be needed to take into consideration as we continue on now to get closer and closer to a definition of understanding what yes and what not. In general, it's good to remember the Raj Bashita, which the Gra actually stresses, la'aloha, which is that the Chachamim were given the rights in these kinds of issues. So where it is that the Torah does not give us strong definitions. It gives us hints. It gives us some type of quality of ach asher yachel kol nefesh or melechet avodah. So by leaving things in that fashion without the associated idea of kasher tziviticha, right? So in other words, okay, I understand. If the Torah says, look, you know the rules, and I say, v'zavachta kasher tziviticha, you have to know what those rules were. Those are all halacha l'meishim Sinai, all the different dinim of Shkita. What defines v'zavachta kasher tziviticha? If I'm telling you to put the totafot b'nei necha, you have to know what those totafot are, because those are, that's not even a general guideline. So there are words that need to have meanings, and words always have meanings that are essentially a mesoret. This word means this for all the past generations. Therefore, I have a right to rely on its meaning that, and that's all part of halacha l'meishim Sinai. This is what the Torah means by such and such a word. But when you're given a definition, and the definition clearly bears different approaches, then what that means is that this is what your interaction with Torah is mechayev you to come up with. And therefore, essentially, what that means is that the Rabbanan have the right, by the definition of the meaning of the concept of Torah Shebaal Peh, to explain what it is that that is going to be defined as. And nobody's claiming that this is exactly what God had in mind. That's not the point. There is an overall definition. How it is that you relate to that definition, that is the question that the Chachamim define according to the Psak of the Halacha of the Chachamim. Fine. So all of that obviously is going to need to be properly understood here. So the question is...
That was beautiful. What about the issue about regular drinking during Chol HaMoed?
I think that's dealt with, that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to the Chachomim to define when it would be necessary to drink and when it isn't necessary to drink. And it wasn't that everybody has a right to...
I thought the Meturgim has to determine that.
I see. Okay, but Shmuel Tainan, that it's Mutter... Now, this is a very interesting new point that Shmuel was making. It's true that very few people can afford the type of peros that have gone through this enhancement process of being spiced up through smoking. But that doesn't mean they wouldn't like to. They just can't afford it. So there's a difference between things that are not part of your culture, like this is not, I don't even know what that means, you know, versus something, oh yeah, I know what that means, but it's too expensive for me. So Shmuel Tainis, the issue over here is that it is a universal, it's just that people don't have it. the things that we talk about that are not considered to be universals are where people simply don't appreciate it because it's a taste that needs to be cultivated. Rav Huna Amar, so Rav Huna says, look, I mean, the problem over here for doing this, what is the isser? It's usser because when you put those spices on the burning coals, you actually put out the flame in the coals for a moment. So therefore, you're being mechabed. Omer le Rav Nachman, I mean, aren't you also going to light the spices themselves? I mean, putting lavender, it's going to burn or whatever. So why did you say, like, why focus on the coals? Why not focus on the havara of the spices themselves? I mean, they do burn, says Rav Huna, because the first thing that you do that's wrong is kivui. And then after a while, it's true that the spices burst at the flame, but I'm talking about the beginning. But of course, you would be over for mavir. Tchilato mechabeh v'sofo mavir. Omer Rav Yehuda, al gabe gachelet asur. When Rav was saying it's usur to put on the spices, he meant that you're not allowed to put it on top of the coals, because indeed, it's first mechabeh, and then it bursts into flames. But if you would take the spices, and you would put them on heated cheres, so then you're not putting anything out, and even if afterwards they burst into flame, that certainly is not the normal way of burning things, and therefore they wouldn't have answered that either. So al cheres it's mutter. But Rabba says, now this is an amazing, it's a throwaway line in the Gemara, that may be the entire basis of not using electrical things on Shabbos, which is incredible. And that is, Rabba introduces this new issue, which is, no, you can't even put it on top of the cheres, because it's going to make molid. Molid means it's going to make something new that didn't exist before. It's going to be molid reach in the cheres. And the Chachomim answered creating things that are completely new, that weren't there before. So this idea, oh my gosh, I mean, like, it's got all types of crazy applications. I mean, because even though, let's say, you're allowed to light something on Yontif, but you can't create the light on Yontif. So if you have a flame, you can take that flame and you can make another flame from that flame, because then you're not creating something out of nowhere. But you can't just, you know, rub your match against something and have it burst into flame. That's already a whole different problem. And then sometime, any time that we press a button, and all of a sudden this dead, inert thing starts doing all kinds of things and talking to you and so on and so forth, then you're being molded something. So this, of course, was the first question of whether do robots have rights? So if we're calling them molid, I mean, if they were born when you turn them on, they ought to have rights too. But anyway, the implications of this thing are very, very far-reaching. So it's amazing. It's like this throwaway line. So you can't do it because it's being molid reach. Rabba v'Rabbi Yosef, the Amrei Tarvayu, that there's also something that is very similar to this, and that is that Sechufi Kasa Shiroi B'Yumetava is Aser. So even if you have a cup that is full of smells that were in it from before, and then you put that, you open that up over the silks, and that way the silk is going to get that smell in it, is Aser, my time amishum de komoli drecha. I don't understand. I mean, lots of times you take a piece of lavender, let's say, you rub it between your finger, or you break it into half or something, kotimo, and you smell it. And people do that all the time, and then they make a brocha and so on. I mean, so, like, why is that different than being molid reach? No, you're missing the point. It's the moly that's important. So when you're talking about the lavender, the smell is there already, right? So hatam recha mi'aita. What he's doing is he's getting it out into a way that he smells more of it. Mashenken, over here, you are literally making that cheres that had no smell in it whatsoever, or that silk that had no smell in it, you're creating that smell, and that's molid recha, and that's what we were talking about. So now getting back to the issue we spoke about the fruit. Is that considered to be Urchel Nefesh? So we said, we had both Rav and Rav Yehuda, both of them said you cannot do this. The thing is that Rava says, I hold, forget about the question whether you could do this on top of a piece of hot boiling pottery. I say it's even mutter on the actual burning coals. What, tell me, I want you to tell me logically, what is the difference between a barbecue where you're taking meat and you're putting the meat on top of the coals and between a smell-a-cue where you're taking the lavender and you're putting the lavender on top of the coals? I mean, basically, assuming, obviously, that Shmuel is right. I mean, Shmuel said that anything that most people would like, they just can't afford it, it's okay. So therefore, first of all, there's no problem about davar shavah l'chol nefesh. Okay, so now you're telling me that there's some kind of iser anyway, and that even if we're being moderate, we're going to be moderate only in a way that wouldn't be... What? Why is it different than a barbecue? Explain to me how it is not the same as making the smell of a delicious meat that you're cooking, and that's all that there is. Dorash Rav Gavia mi Beit Katil. There was another mice like this. He was standing there at the Pischa, the Veresh Galuta, and he said, Keturah is Shori. Now, what did that mean? I mean, is Keturah the name of a girl? Is Keturah mean tying things? Is Keturah mean smoking a pipe? Is Keturah cigarette smoking? Is Keturah smelling up the begadim? Gosh. Omer le'amemar, what is Keturah? Do you mean a Keturah biyode? Keturah was something that they used to use for calling, for making these beautiful, very complex knotted sleeves, the puff sleeves on women's clothing or puff shoulders. So they would have to like go agonizingly and put through like 50 different, you know, the strings go through, then you have to tie it just right, and then you go to the next layer. So this way you get like layer after layer of puffed shoulders or puffed sleeves. And is that what you mean? So then it would be like, I mean, that's a maisa umanu. I mean, that's like really pure malacha. If you're talking about keturah in terms of smoking, so then it should be usur, because then you're going to be putting out the things, the coals that you're putting your, whatever it is that you're smoking on. Amalei Rav Ashi, actually, he was talking about smoking. And the reason that he said it's mutter is because he says, why is it different than putting a piece of meat on a coal in a barbecue? It's exactly the same thing. You're putting out the coal. And that's part of what is necessary for getting the correct smell into your meat. Ikeni Amrei, there's a different way in which this back and forth went. Amrei Amemar, what keturah? Did keturah mean the biyade? That's also because it's maisa umanhu on the women's dresses. And if it's la'ashen, so in this version what he told him is, if it's la'ashen, it's also because it's kamulit recha. So Rav Ashi in this version said, excuse me, I was the one who told Rav Gavia Beit Katil this halacha, don't go attacking him. I didn't say it on my own either. I said it over Mishmei Degavra Rabba. I said it over in the name of a very great person. And then, namely, I explained to him that it's referring to La'ashen, the fruits, Mide Dehavri Abisra Agamri, exactly what we said before, that it's no different than getting the meat ready on your barbecue. And the last thing we said in the Mishnah over here was that you're allowed to make the Gdi Mikulas according to Rabbi Gamliel. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Tudus Ishromi Hinhiget B'nei Romi Lechogedi Mikulas B'leile Pesachim. Shokule, so the Rabbanan sent a message to Tudus in Rome. You know, if you were anybody but Tudus, I mean, okay, you're a very chashuv guy, you're a big Talmud Chacham, and, you know, you're the head of your community. I mean, we're going to give you an opportunity to admit that you were wrong. But if it be anybody else, we'd put him into Nidui. Because, Yomolek Tudus, Ata Gozrono Alecha Nidui. Why? Because Ata Machilet B'nei Yisrael Kachim Bachutz. You're making people eat kachim outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Kachim? What kachim? What are we talking about? I mean, all we did was have a little bit of lamb chops. Where did it get to be kachim? No, what we mean is that it could actually cause people to make them. It looks like kachim, and people might think that you're allowed to eat kachim outside of Yerushalayim. Now, once we're on the topic of three things lakula or three things lakumra, we can also have our Richie introduce yet another thing that are three things. One is Talisker. The other might be Glenfiddich. What do you want to offer as the third option? You're muted.
Open.
Okay, bring it out.
New recording?
I don't know. Do you feel it should be a new recording? I mean, I'm not sure. Like, does it belong more on the Ahmed Aleph part, all the way from the back of half of Ahmed Beis, or belongs on the Ahmed Beis part? I don't know. I don't think it makes much difference. So we already introduced this as Chof Gimel, so what the heck, huh? Okay, Ari, so bring it out. You know, put your money where your mouth is, man. And if you do it in the car, you're in big trouble. All right, Rich, go for it. Rich?
Hello?
You ready? Richie?
Yeah. So,
now, there were also, L'chaim, there were also three things that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was matir, and the Chachomi Maser. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's cow would walk out on Shabbos with this beautiful colored strap between its horns just because it was so beautiful. The Chachomi didn't think that was mutter because it was considered to be a matzah, and you are mitzvah on Shvitat Be'emtecha. Furthermore, you could be mekardinet abeima biyom tov. And on Yom Tov, you would be allowed to use a comb. Technically, it's currying, it's called, right? And you could curry with a comb. And this is talking about, as we'll see in the word, it's talking about a metal comb. And that could cause sometimes bleeding. And we'll have to see why he was being matir this. Vishochakimet apilpulim birechayim shalahem. And you can grind corn, peppercorn, in the small grinder that we use for preparing pepper, even though this is tzorach ochol nefesh. So why did the Chachomim aser it? So this is a big machlokas again, because the question is whether tchina here would be included in the general heter of tzorach ochol nefesh, or it's one of the things that is in general not included. And again, that depends on how we define tzorach ochol nefesh. Those who hold that even tchina is mutter, they would say that the reason you can't use, according to the Chachomim, the grinder, is because of uvda dechol. So it looks like you're doing things the way you would normally do things during the week, and it's not appropriate for Yom Tov. Rabbi Yudaimer, you cannot do this currying with a metal comb, at least, because you're going to make bleeding. It's ozech habura. But you could be mekartzef. And mekartzef uses a wooden comb, and it's got these very thick-ended, teeth. And therefore, those kind of broad teeth are not going to cause any kind of bleeding. Whereas the Chachomim say you can't do any type of currying, not mekardim, and not mekartzafim, which is strange. Why not? So that we'll discuss in the Gemara. Now, ask the Gemara, what do you mean his cow? His cow? Do you know who you're talking about? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, to talk about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's cow is like talking about Richie's schnapps. I mean, this is ridiculous. Do you know how many cows he had? The Amar Rav. You're telling me Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had a cow? The Amar Rav, or something, it was Rehud Amar Rav. Every single year, 13,000 newborn calves was the miser that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had to take off. So that means he had 130,000 new calves every year. Now, just try to imagine how large his holdings were. It's a little bit weird to call it his cow, don't you think? Tana, well, yes. The truth is, by the way, I mean, what was he doing with all of this stuff? By the time he was old enough to be doing these things, there was no longer a Beis HaMikdash to bring it to. So how would he be bringing Meiser Behema, as Tosis points out? Meiser Behema was bought after the Churban. So where would he be bringing this to? So one thing Tosa suggests is that, look, maybe this doesn't mean literally the miser from Eisabayim, and maybe it means taxes. You know, so like a 10% tax you were supposed to give to the melech, and this is what he would do. Or it could actually mean Reb Elazar ben Azariah, but it might mean while he was a kid, and it was his apotropus that did this. And that actually did take place during the time when the Beis HaMikdash was still there. Rich, please, if you don't mind, to mute yourself. Okay, but and then it's just an interesting historical aside. Anyway, says the Gemara, well, of course. I mean, that's the whole point. The Mishnah is trying to point out to a problem. He didn't have a cow that had a ritsua between its horns. It wasn't his. There was a neighbor, this old lady, who lived next door. And she had, not next door, maybe down the block, a mile away, whatever. She had this one little cow, and she was, like, really big on her cow. And so she had this decorative thing in the cow's horns. But he never said anything to her, and he should have been mocha, and he wasn't mocha. Because of that, we're calling it all his fault, and it's his cow. And therefore, we put it together with the things that he did that the Chachomim were against. And it was Nikret al Shmo. Okay, but let's talk about the things that he really was matir. So, Mikardin et abeima b'yom tov. Tana Rabbana. First of all, the Mishnah uses two terms, Kirud and Kirtsuf. Can you tell me the difference between them? Ezeu Kirud ve'ezeu Kirtsuf. Kirud uses a small tooth metal comb. And it's like a, the human, what do they call those for lice comb. And those can easily cause bleeding. And the kirtsuf, however, is very large teeth. It's actually a wooden kind of comb, and it does not make a chabura. And the truth is, if you look at closely in the Mishnah, we're talking about three different shitas. Because Rabbi Yehuda, he holds, look, that's the sheet of Reb Yehuda all over, is that a Dover Shein Miskavin is Osir. And therefore, it doesn't matter whether you were Mechavin to cause bleeding or not. It's definitely going to cause, it's definitely going to be Osir anyway. The difference is that the Kerud, which is Kitanim, could cause bleeding. But the Kirtsuf, which is Gedolim, and it does not cause bleeding, and therefore it's mutter, because lo gazurin on Kirtsuf ato Kirut. We're not concerned that if we allow you to use the big wooden comb, you're going to end up using a lice comb. Whereas the Rabbanan, they agree in principle with Rabbi Yehuda that a Dover Shein Miskavin is Aser, but they say you can't do anything, not Kirtsuf, not Kirut, because they hold that once you allow currying, people are just going to use whatever comb they want to use. And therefore, they're gazrina kirtzufato kirut. Mashenkin, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who is matir everything, he dafka argues on the whole principle, because he is going alibet Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon says that davar she'eino miskaven is actually mutter. And since you do not have indas to cause bleeding, and it's not necessarily going to cause bleeding, therefore, bein kirut, bein kirtzuf, is considered to be mutter, because it's certainly not a psik resha v'lo yamud. Omar Rav Amr Reb Nachman Omar Shmuel V'Amr Lom Reb Nachman L'chudei Halachak Rabbi Shimon Shirei Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Modelo. We paskin like Rabbi Shimon that a dover shein miskaven is mutter, because here we see that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah paskins like him. Says Rava, that's weird. Why don't you paskin like Rabbi Yehuda that it's usher? Because the Chachamim, who are the Rov, agree to him. I mean, what are you telling me, that you believe the Halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? I mean, the Chachamim say not like that. Omar Leila, I didn't mean that's why the Halacha is like that. I hold that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, from millions of things, from all over Shas. Then furthermore, you take a look over here in this Mishnah, you see, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah also agrees with Rabbi Shimon. I wasn't basing it on that. Now, once we were already talking about using a pepper grinder, we cannot resist the Mishnahs of Kalim again. And therefore, Richie, in a moment of sweet memories, wants to introduce issues of Tumah V'Taira in this next Mishnah. He has to first unmute. No, not on video.
Too much open. There we go. It's all okay. Hey, the commissioner.
Boy, oh boy, I shouldn't have talked about all those drinks. Hare chayim shel pilpilin. To me, amishum shleisha kalim. So the little thing we were talking about before, pepper grinder, actually consists of three completely different kalim in one, each one of which can have different dinim legabe tuma. You have, first of all, one of it is the kli kibbol, which is the part on the bottom that the little pieces of the pepper go into. So that's a regular pshute. It would be pshute kli etz, but it has a beit kibbol for those little pieces, and that's a beit kibbol. And then it's got the part that is the actual grinder, which always has a little metal piece to do the grinding. So that's kli matechet. That for sure is pekabel tuma. And then you have the middle piece, which even if it's made out of wood, but since it is made as a sieve, we are gozer, anything that is, looks like woven, anything that's weaving, and a kavara is weaving, to be a mekabel tuma, even if technically speaking it might be called pshute kli etz, but it's doima to real kalim. We saw that in many cases in Masechet Kalim. Tana, the tachtona, the bottom part of the grinder, that's tamei because it's a kli kibbol. The middle part is tamei because it is basically a kevara, and since a kevara looks like normal begadim, so the rabbanon asered any type of woven, either baguette or even made out of cellulose here. Elyonan, the top part, is because that bottom piece that actually grinds is made always out of metal, at least the bottom part with the actual teeth. Maybe that's attached to some wooden piece, but the active piece is metal, and therefore it's mekabel tuma as kli matechet. Richie, you're on.
I can't keep up with this, Rabbi. This is overtime. Zot ha'elek ha'mishnah.
Agalah shel katan. So how about a little red wagon, which we let a kid play around with, that his friends drag him around in the wagon? Tosfos says that is not what it's talking about, because a little red wagon is a classic Merkav, Mishkav, and Moshav, and why in the world is it necessary to say that it's Mekabel Tuma from Midrash? Any idiot knows that. Even the two-year-old kid who's using the wagon knows that, for heaven's sakes. No. What an Agalah shel Katan is, says Tosfos, is a baby walker. So that since the baby leans on it when it's walking, he describes how you make this walker with three wheels and a little thing. So the baby walker, that's the chiddush. That even though you don't put the baby in the walker, but since the baby is somechet on it, so because of that, it's mekabel tumas midras we're talking about over here, where the child may be a zav. We saw before that children are often born with zivas. Nobody throws them into a mikvah, mayim chayim, or anything. So they retain their dinim of a zav. That's because of the mother's hormones. So, tumea midras. And it can be moved on Shabbos, this thing. It's definitely not mukta. It's considered to be a real kli. Ve'ena nigreret el agabi kelim. But you can't drag it over the ground, because what happens if one of the wheels stalls or something? And then what you're going to be doing is you're going to be making a furrow in the ground. So if that's indoors, so then it's a problem of gumes. And if it's outdoors, it's a problem of charisha. So you have to put down something. You have to put down a piece of carpet under it or so on. That type of thing you can do. Rabbi Yehuda says, not true. You can drag this thing because it has wheels. And I agree, of course, this is my shita. Listen, man, I'm the one who told everybody you're not allowed to drag the mita and the kise and the safsal, and therefore any kalim, you'd be right, any groring. But this agala, something with wheels, actually you are allowed to. You know why? Because what it does is, you say, but take a look, right there on Mars. You've got these furrows on the ground on Mars. Now, how do you have furrows on the ground on Mars? Isn't the Mars rover rolling over it? So the same thing is true of your Earthling roller. And this baby is actually rolling over, creating furrows. Ah, that's not furrows. That's koveshet. Koveshet looks like a furrow. But what it actually is pressing the earth down. It is not separating anything. It's not making a difference between them. Don't call it a furrow just because it looks like a furrow. So it's pressed down, and pressing is not considered to be making a harisha. It's going to do you a lot of good to plant in that, right? It's making it worse. It's not harisha, and it's not mashvi gumais. Fine. So now, agalah shel katan, the first case we add, tmeya midras. Why? Because the baby leans on it while it's walking. You're telling me on clothes you can drag it over, on carpet, but not on the ground. Why? Because it makes furrows. The covered charitz. Now, who's it going like? It's got to go like Rabbi Yehuda, because it's certainly a dover she'ena miskaven, because according to Rabbi Shimon holds a dover she'ena miskaven is mutter. That's not Rabbi Shimon omer gorer adam mita kisev isafsal, even allowed to drag a bed, as long as it wouldn't be a psigresha, ubevat shelo yitkaven lasot charitz, as long as it's not your intention. So then the Mishnah is going according to Rabbi Yehuda. So how do you explain the end of the Mishnah where Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's okay? I think he just said it's not okay. That's Rabbi Yehuda. Ema seifa. Rabbi Yehuda omer, ein hakol nigrarim b'shabbat chutz min ha'agalam b'tnei shu koveshet. And mashma, that it's only kovation, it doesn't cause a charitz. So then who said the beginning of the Mishnah that it does make a charitz? Trei tanoi alibid Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanakama holds that since it could happen that a wheel actually jams, and if the wheel jams, then you'll be pulling it across the ground and you will be making a charitz. So because of that, we asser it according to that mandioma. Now this is a very special Richie moment who once again is called upon, this time with even greater demands being put upon him, and this after three separate drinks. This is not simple. We are going to see an amazing feat of pure human willpower to be able to respond to this one. Hadran Allah Perek Yom Tov. It was said. There just wasn't enough willpower to press the button to unmute. It gets confusing after the first. Ein sadin dagim and abivarium beyomtov. In case Richie's got himself an aquarium in his house, don't put your hands in and start taking out the fish for doing some goldfish swallowing on Yontov. And we're going to see why that is not mutter on Yontov tomorrow. Bezrat Hashem, same time, 9:30. Get those drinks ready, Rich. I think Barnea is in the market also, so better have some extra. Meanwhile, I wish everybody a moadim l'simcha, chagim uzmanim l'sason, and to tell you how much I missed seeing you during Yontov.